Whale Harbor. Who was he? I asked. The man who died? I believe he was one of the Russells, or maybe an Albury. I'm not really sure. But he was standing right about here on the beach, cleaning his cast net when it happened. He'd caught about 3 dozen mullet, and they all got fried to a crisp by that lightning bolt, my father said. Your Grandpa Bobby told me that story a long time ago, why they call it Thunder Beach. I couldn't help but notice how unusually sunny and clear it was. Dad must have seen me squirming because he said, "Don't worry, son. It was a freak deal, what they call an atmospheric anomaly. Probably never happen here again in a million years." "Dad, come on home." "But what if it's a trap? The sheriff setting me up." "It's not a trap. The sheriff never wants to lay eyes on you again," I said. The water boiled and a barracuda broke the surface, slashing through a school of needlefish. "I'm right about Dusty dumping crap in the water," Dad said. "I know you are." I told him that the sewage tank at the dock was broken, and how the crew of the Coral Queen had faked hooking up the hose to it. "I figured it was something like that," he said bitterly. "Lice Peking knows all about that scam, I bet." "Dad, I've got more bad news. Lice Peking is gone."
"No!"
I told him about the bald guy with the crooked nose coming to Lice's trailer, and about the bloodstain Shelley found later in her jeep. "She thinks Dusty Muehlman killed Lice, or had him killed to shut him up," I said. My father looked horrified. "I can't believe that," he said, but his voice was shaky. "Abby thinks we should pack up and run to Canada," I said. "What do you think, Noah?" "I think it's awful cold up there." "No doubt," he said quietly. "And those snowmobiles, Dad? They're even noisier than jet skis." "That's a fact." "So we'll figure something out. We always do," I said. "Come on home." Dad was lost in thought, staring gloomily up the shoreline toward the mouth of the basin where the Coral Queen was moored. He said, "Dusty offered to drop the charges against me because he doesn't want the bad publicity from a trial. And he got rid of Lice as a warning to anyone else who knows the real story about the casino boat, anyone who could back me up." "Makes sense," I said. "But if Lice is really dead, it's all my fault." "No, Dad. If Lice is dead, it's because he was greedy," I said. "He didn't want to tell the truth unless he got money for it. If he'd gone to the Coast Guard way back when, like he should have, Dusty would have been shut down a long time ago. So let's go home. Please?" "The water looks clean today, doesn't it? But you can't always tell just by looking." He got up and slowly waded in, trailing his fingers along the surface. "Your Grandpa Bobby used to bring me down to the Keys 3-4 times a year," he said. "When I was about your age, I stood right here and watched him catch a 14-pound mutton fish off the wings of a stingray." "On what?" I asked. "A chunk of frozen shrimp," Dad recalled. "I bet there hasn't been a mutton snapper on these flats in ages. Lots of reasons. Fish trappers, pollution, too many boats. That's what people do when they find a special place that's wild and full of life. They trample it to death." He spun around to face me. "Noah, you understand why I sunk the Coral Queen, right? Every time Dusty empties her holding tank, it's like flushing 100 filthy toilets into God's ocean." It made me sick to think about it. Still, I couldn't afford to let my father get himself all wound up again. There was something else I needed to tell him, something even more important. "Mom wants you to come home right now," I said. "She said it's not open for debate. No more speeches," she said. "No more excuses. Just come home." "Oh, she'll settle down." It was like talking to a brick wall. So I took out the sledgehammer. "Dad, listen to me," I said. "Mom's thinking about filing for divorce." "What? No way." I overheard her say something on the phone to Grandma Janet. My father stood knee-deep in the water, blinking and cocking his head like he wasn't sure if he'd heard me right. "She actually used that word? Divorce?" "Loud and clear. She's already spoken to Mr. Shine. Abby was eavesdropping." "Oh, man," Dad sighed. "What a mess." At long last, reality seemed to be sinking in. I could see he was really worried about what Mom might do next. So was I. "Come on," I said. "Let's go." He reached down and scooped up a baby blue crab, which he cupped in his hands. When he bent down to inspect it, the crab promptly fastened its miniature claws to his nose and hung there like a weird painted ornament. My father and I broke out laughing until the crab let go and plopped back into the water. "I'll tell your mom I'll be home shortly," he said. "We'll take the skiff out this evening, you, me, and Abby. Catch some snappers for supper." I felt pretty good when I hopped on my bike and headed for home. I'd done the tough job that I needed to do, and Dad had responded the way I'd hoped. As I rode along, my thoughts were still bouncing all over the place, and I wasn't paying attention to what was ahead of me, unfortunately. One second I was pedaling full speed, the next I was hurtling over my handlebars. I landed hard on my right shoulder and rolled. When I came to a stop, I was flat on my back, staring up at the pinched, angry face of Jasper Muehlman Jr. "Hey, dork brain, where's your training wheels?" he said. I heard a dumb hick laugh that was unmistakably Bull's. He and Jasper Jr. must have spotted me coming and ducked into the woods to wait. I sat up and saw my bike on the ground, a freshly snapped gumbo limbo branch sticking out of the front spokes. "That's original," I said to Jasper Jr. Bull snatched me up by the collar and dragged me into the trees. I could hear Jasper Jr. running after us. When we got to a clearing, Bull straightened me up, spun me around, and pinned my arms. Jasper Jr. got right in my face. "So where's your big white trash bodyguard? The one who knocked over my wheelbarrow?" I wondered if he already knew that something bad happened to Lice Peaking. "He wasn't my bodyguard," I replied. "He was my personal chauffeur." Jasper Jr. said I was a real comedian. Then he hauled off and slugged me in the gut. "That's for Snake Creek," he snarled, "for making me sink my John boat." The punch knocked the wind out of me, and I went limp as a noodle in Bull's grip. I remember thinking of something clever to say, but all I could do was squeak like a leaking balloon. It seemed to take forever to catch my breath, and right away, Jasper Jr. slugged me again. "And that's for your crazy father sinking my father's boat," he said. At that point, the world turned fuzzy and gray, and I thought I was history. My mouth was flapping, but absolutely nothing was coming out. I heard Jasper Jr. say, "Bull, you want a turn?" "No, bro, I'm good," Bull said, and let me drop to the ground. Immediately, I closed my eyes and let my tongue hang out and pretended I was dead. It might work fabulously for possums, but it sure didn't work for me. Jasper Jr. kicked me so hard in the thigh bone that his big toe made a sharp popping sound. He started hopping around and hollering that I'd busted his foot. Bull remarked that it was usually a smart idea to put on shoes before you started kicking somebody. Jasper Jr. told him to shut up and gimped away, moaning. I heard Bull chuckling as he followed his wounded friend back to the road. I would have been chuckling too, if it hadn't hurt so much. 10. It isn't easy pretending everything's wonderful when you feel like you've been thrown off the roof of a building. Luckily, there weren't any bruises that Mom and Dad could see, because this time Jasper Jr. had socked me in the stomach, not my eye, and the ugly knot on my thigh bone was covered up by my pants. I didn't tell my parents what had happened, because they would have freaked and gone straight to Dusty Muehlman, or maybe even the police, which is not how I wanted to handle it. So I just sat around like a lump in front of the television, trying not to move. In the summer, I'm always outdoors, fishing or snorkeling or skateboarding, so Abby got suspicious about me hanging around the house every day. Mom thought it was weird, too, but she was busy keeping an eye on my father. Mr. Shine had arranged for Dad to return to the jail and surrender himself. The sheriff couldn't wait to send him back home, although a judge put him under house arrest until the Coral Queen case was settled. To keep track of his whereabouts, they clipped an electronic bracelet on Dad's right ankle. If he stepped so much as 3 inches past our front door, a signal would beep at the sheriff's station, and they'd come after him again. For a week, we were like a semi-normal family, except that my father wasn't allowed out of the house. One of us always stayed with him, not just to keep him company, but also to make sure he didn't try anything cute, like prying off the ankle bracelet. We played lots of video games and watched fishing shows on ESPN, and didn't talk at all about Dusty's casino boat. Abby's new project was building an Olympic village for hermit crabs, and Dad really got into it. Abby and I collected the crabs. There were scads of them in the woods along the old highway, while my father sat at the kitchen table working with his tools. Before long, he'd put together a miniature track, a lap pool, a pole vault, even a hurdle run. Unfortunately, the average hermit crab isn't particularly athletic, having to haul a clunky seashell around on his back. So the sports competition part of Abby's project sort of fizzled. Most of the crabs hunkered down and refused to budge. Still, it gave Dad something to do that kept his mind off the Coral Queen. Until Shelley showed up late one afternoon. Abby watched her get out of the Jeep and said, "This ought to be good." Shelley was dressed in her casino boat bartender's outfit, which was loud and skimpy. She wore high heels and stockings that looked like they were made from a mullet net. As I opened the door to let her in, I decided it was probably a good thing that Mom wasn't home. "Long time no see," Shelley said to my father, and gave him a brisk businesslike hug. Then she introduced herself to Abby, who was gawking at the barbed wire tattoo on Shelley's bare arm. "How about something cold to drink?" Dad offered. "Iced tea would be super. I can't stay long," Shelley said. We all sat down in the living room, Shelley crossing her legs and sipping her tea. My father was on the edge of his seat, looking like he was dying to pepper her with questions. "How you doing, Noah?" Shelley said to me. "Great. Feeling okay?" She gave me a narrow look to let me know that she knew I wasn't telling the truth. It was creepy how sharp her radar was. "So how's work?" I said, eager to change the subject. "Work is work," Shelley replied. Then, turning to Dad, "Payne, what's that thing on your leg?" My father explained about the electronic bracelet. "I'm on house arrest. You believe it?" "Boy, that really sucks," Shelley said. Out of nowhere, Abby asked about the tattoo. "That's one thing about my sister. She's not afraid to say anything." Shelley smiled and traced one finger along the dark blue links. "That's a story for when you're older," she said. "It was a long night and a bad party." "But why barbed wire?" Abby always called it barbed wire. "To show the world how rough and tough I was," said Shelley. "To be honest, I wish it was daisies instead. This thing's gonna look mighty stupid when I'm 80 years old and my grandkids are asking how come I got a cow fence painted on my arm. Hey, Payne, can you take a bath with that ankle gizmo? Would you get all electrocuted?" Dad laughed. "Nah, it's waterproof." "Amazing," Shelley said. "Any word from Lice?" I asked hopefully. She shook her head. "But I got some other news. That's why I stopped over." We waited as she glugged a long drink from her glass. "They're at it again," she said, dumping the toilet tanks into the water. "Last night I stayed late to restock the bar, and I saw it for myself. Dusty was already gone with the money, and I guess the crew didn't know I was still there." I noticed that my father's fists were clenched on the arms of his chair. Abby saw it too. "They just hung the hose off the side of the boat," Shelley went on, "like it was business as usual." "What time was this?" Dad asked. "Between 1 and 1:30. The marina was empty," Shelley said. Abby spoke up again. "That man is major scum." "No doubt," said Shelley, "and here's what else. The big bald guy with the Z-shaped nose, the one who came to see Lice that night before he went missing? His name's Luno, and he's Dusty's main muscle. I think he's from Morocco or someplace like that." I purposely didn't look at Abby. Neither of us had told my father that she'd bitten Dusty's goon that night at the marina when he snuck up and grabbed her. Dad would have gone bonkers if he found out. And Mom? Well, forget about it. We'd be halfway to Saskatchewan by now. "What if they get suspicious and start hassling you?" I asked Shelley. "Why would they? Think about it from Dusty's point of view. Why would I come back to work for him if I knew he and Luna were mixed up in Lysa's death? Heck, I'd have to be suicidal, right?" Shelley winked. "Nah, Dusty bought the whole sad story. He thinks I wanted my job back just because Lice left me broke. And I'll be honest, the money's not too shabby." Dad stood up and started pacing back and forth. "Well, I'd better be off," Shelley said. "How are things going with Dusty?" I asked. "Oh, don't worry about that. He's under control." "You be careful," my father told her. "Yeah, well, don't go sinking that boat again," Shelley said, "especially if I'm on it." Then she said goodbye and breezed out the door, leaving us in silence with a light, sweet scent of tangerines. That night, Abby barely touched her dinner. She said she didn't feel well and asked to go to bed early. Mom tucked her in and returned to the table. "I think your sister's got a touch of the flu. Are you feeling all right?" "Fine," I said. "Pain?" "Never better," said my father. "Did you call the taxi company?" Mom asked. "Tomorrow, I promise," Dad said. He was supposed to make sure that they were holding his job for him. "Actually, I was thinking of trying to get my captain's license back," he said matter-of-factly, "so I could guide in the backcountry again." My mother put down her fork. "You can't be serious." "Well, why not?" "After what you did to the casino boat, you honestly believe the Coast Guard will let you take customers back out on the water?" she said. "Honey, you'll be lucky to get your cab back." Dad stabbed at a green bean and let the subject drop. "Somebody from the Herald phoned while you were in the shower," Mom said. I explain that you won't be giving any more interviews, right?
Yeah,
my father mumbled. One of the conditions for Dusty Muehlman dropping the criminal charges was that Dad stop ranting to the press.
You know, he started flushing his holding tanks again, Dad said.
It's true. Ask Noah.
Mom looked at me, then back at my father.
How do you know this?
We've got our sources, Dad said mysteriously. Someone who works on the Coral Queen, I added.
I see, my mother said.
Then this source of yours should go straight to the authorities and make a report. That's the way it's supposed to be done. Noah, please pass the rice.
But Dusty's got connections with the Coast Guard and the cops, Dad complained. They won't do diddly unless somebody catches him red-handed.
And maybe somebody will, said Mom. But whoever that somebody is, they don't live in this house. I've made my last visit to the jailhouse. Is that understood?
That night I couldn't sleep, so I dug out a stack of old skateboarding magazines. It was real late, well past midnight, when Mom peeked into my room and saw that I was still awake. She sat down on the bed and told me she was sorry that dinner had gotten a little tense. Everything would get back to normal, she said, once Dad's legal problems were over and he was working again. It took every ounce of courage, but I had to ask.
Did you mean what you said to Grandma Janet about a divorce?
Mom took a short breath and pressed her lips together.
You heard me on the phone that night?
I'm so sorry, Noah. I was extremely upset. I could tell she wanted to give me one of those big, smothering hugs like she used to do when I was small. This time, though, all she did was reach over and touch my hand.
Your father is a very unusual and intense personality, she said, as I'm sure you've noticed. I love him dearly, but sometimes he drives me bananas. More than sometimes, truthfully.
I know, Mom. Look, I understand that he gets terribly upset by certain things he sees in the world. Greed and injustice and cruelty to nature. That's one of the things that first attracted me, seeing how deeply he cared. But he's a grown man, my mother said, and he needs to start behaving like one. I don't care to be married to a jailbird.
So you were serious, I said.
I'd never bluff about something like divorce. It wouldn't be fair to you and Abby. I didn't need to tell Mom how worried we both were. She knew.
Speaking of your sister, she said, I'd better peek in and see how she's feeling.
I said goodnight and turned out the light and pulled the covers up to my neck. I heard Mom open Abby's door and say her name. Abby didn't answer, so I figured she was already asleep. But then Mom started calling out for my father in a voice that didn't even sound like hers. It was so choked up. Dad came running down the hall from one direction, and I came running from the other. When we entered Abby's room, my mother was standing there with tears in her eyes. Her knuckles were pale and pressed to her cheeks, and her shoulders trembled.
She's gone, Mom cried. Abby's gone.
My sister's bed was empty. The window was wide open, and the screen, which had been removed, was propped against the bedroom wall.
Okay, everybody take it easy, Dad urged. I could tell he was trying to calm himself as much as me and my mother.
He tried to wrap his arms around Mom, but she jerked away.
Somebody kidnapped her, Payne. Somebody broke in and took her.
No, Mom, nobody took her, I said.
How do you know? How?
What could I say? Sometimes I sneak out of my bedroom window late at night to go bridge fishing or crabbing with Tom and Rado. One time I got back and Abby was hiding in my room, watching me as I climbed in through the window and put back the screen. She never ratted me out to my parents, but obviously she'd remembered the trick.
A kidnapper wouldn't bother to stack the screen against the wall, I pointed out. He'd just cut his way through with a knife.
Noah's absolutely right, Dad said. This is way too neat and tidy. It's pure Abby.
Mom wiped her eyes on my father's sleeve. So what you're saying is she ran away? Why in the world would she do that?
I don't think Abby ran away, I said.
Noah, get to the point.
She probably just had something she needed to do.
In the middle of the night, all by herself?
My mother turned to my father and froze him with one of her deadly laser beam stares.
Payne, what's going on here?
I'll be right back, Dad said, and rushed out of the room. Mom spun back toward me and snatched me by the left ear.
Young man, she said.
She never called me young man unless she meant business.
Yes, Mom?
I was almost sure that I knew where Abby had gone, and I had a feeling that Dad had figured it out, too.
Does this have something to do with the Coral Queen? My mother asked.
It's possible, I said weakly.
Has this whole family gone completely insane?
She let go of my ear and called out,
Payne, you come back here right this second!
Moments later, Dad appeared at the bedroom door. He had put on a ball cap, a pair of khaki trousers, and his old deck shoes,
In one hand was the portable spotlight that he kept stowed on the skiff.
"Where do you think you're going?" Mom demanded.
"The video camera is missing," my father said.
"Answer my question. Where are you going?"
"To find Abby," Dad replied evenly.
"Payne, you're under house arrest, remember?"
My father sheepishly pulled up the right leg of his pants to reveal a bare ankle.
"Oh, that's just terrific," said my mother.
She was not normally a sarcastic person, but she could be brutal when she was.
"I'll go pack your suitcase for state prison," she said to Dad. "Will they let you bring your own pajamas?"
"Donna, please, there's no time to argue."
"Oh, really? Our little girl is roaming around alone in the dead of night, and meanwhile, you've tripped off some fugitive alarm at the sheriff's station, and any minute a dozen squad cars with screaming sirens will be racing down our street."
"I'll go get Abby by myself," I volunteered. "Don't worry, Mom, I can handle it."
"No, we'll go together, all three of us," she declared. "And if we get into a jam, I want both of you wise guys to keep your lips zipped and let me do the talking. Is that understood?"
My father and I glanced helplessly at each other. There was no point in objecting.
"Noah, get a can of bug spray out of the pantry," Mom said.
"And Payne, could you please go find my car keys?"
11.
Mom drove, both hands on the wheel. She stuck to the speed limit because she didn't want the police to pull us over and find my father in the car. When she turned down the road to the marina, Dad leaned out the passenger window and began shining the spotlight through the mangroves in case Abby was hiding there. He lit up a family of raccoons and a grouchy blue heron, but there was no sign of my sister. We were more than 100 yards from the docks when Mom stopped the car. I suggested that we split up and start searching, but Dad said no way. It was too risky. We got out of the car and together headed toward the boats. Every so often, my mother would call out Abby's name while Dad probed the shadows with a spotlight. As we approached the marina, I could see that the Coral Queen was dark, though a light shone in the ticket shack at the front of the dock. I put a finger to my lips, signaling for my parents to stay quiet. Parked by one of the lampposts was Dusty Muehlman's long black SUV. We huddled in the shadow of the broken sewage tank. Dad had snatched a rusty gaff from a dock box near one of the charter boats, and I could tell by the sound of his breathing that he was agitated and pumped up. Mom, however, remained calm. Dad said, "You two stay here. I'll go scope it out."
"You'll do no such thing," my mother told him. "Tonight we're a team."
Dad started to argue, but then he stopped and cocked his head to listen. I heard it too. A man's laughter, coming from inside the ticket office.
"What if he's got Abby?" I whispered anxiously.
"Then we'll politely ask him to give her back," Mom said. "And if that doesn't work, we'll try something else. Come on."
My mom only weighs 110 pounds, but she doesn't think small. She walked up to the shack and rapped on the door and didn't wait for it to be opened. She just barged in. Dad and I were right behind her.
"Why, look who's here," said Dusty Muehlman, hanging up the phone. He was sitting under a bare light bulb at a wobbly card table. Piled in front of him were stacks of cash and tally sheets from the gambling boat. Mom said, "Dusty, I apologize for the interruption, but this is very important."
"No problem, Donna."
He looked highly amused by the sight of us.
"Have you seen Abby tonight?" my mother asked.
"Abby? What would she be doing hanging around this place?" Dusty scoffed. Dad started edging forward with his tarpon gaff, which wasn't good.
"She went looking for pilchards," I piped up.
Sometimes the boat basins were loaded with little fish, which Dusty Muehlman knew for a fact. "We're supposed to go fishing tomorrow, and she decided to catch her own bait." Dusty didn't fall for my story.
"Abby ain't much bigger than a pilchard herself. I'd sure like to see how she throws a net," he said.
"What's she doing out so late anyway? Most little girls would have been tucked in beddy by a long time ago."
"Have you seen her?" Mom asked again. "We're getting worried."
"Nope." Dusty was wearing a baggy, fruit-colored shirt that was decorated with palm trees. A fat, soggy cigar wagged in the corner of his downturned mouth. Fortunately, it wasn't lit. Otherwise, we would have gagged on the smoke in that closet-sized room.
"Let me check with Luno," he said, and spoke gruffly into a walkie-talkie.
Then he looked up and addressed my father.
"Payne, I'm a little surprised to see you out and about. Sheriff told me you were under house arrest."
"I was," Dad said, "until my daughter went missing." His jaw was set and his shoulders were bunched. He was wound up as tight as a spring, and I thought that any second he might pounce on Dusty Muehlman, who was smaller and flabbier. Mom must have been thinking the same thing. She snatched the sharp gaff from my father's hand and carefully placed it upright in a corner.
"Dusty, listen," she said.
"Payne's got something he wants to say." I do? Dad asked. Yes, you do, remember? My mother replied pointedly. You wanted to apologize for what happened to the Coral Queen. I burst out coughing like I was having a seizure. I couldn't help it. Apologize? My father said numbly. Yes, Payne. We had this discussion the other night. Mom's tone was pleasant but determined. You and Dusty have known each other too long to let this kind of situation get out of control.
Donna's right, Dusty said. All those years we fished out of Ted's, we never had a problem.
Dad was steaming, but there wasn't much he could do. Dusty had promised to drop the criminal charges only if Dad agreed to behave. Mom must have figured that this was as good a time as any for Dad to start acting remorseful, even if he didn't mean it. Fine, my father said stiffly. I'm sorry for sinking your boat.
Apology accepted. Dusty smacked on the cigar, and his shifty gray eyes swung to me. Son, I heard from Jasper Jr. that you've been giving him a hard time.
You're kidding, right? I said. Dusty shook his head. Dad looked at me curiously. No, it's the other way around, I started to protest. He and Bull what? Asked Dad. Nothing. Noah, what's going on? My mother said, like she'd already forgotten about my black eye. I figured she just didn't want to stir up more trouble, with Abby missing and Dad's future freedom in Dusty Muleman's hands. Still, I had to bite back the urge to tell everything that had really happened between me and Jasper Jr. Dusty was clearly enjoying himself at my expense. He knew the truth, too. I could see by the way he smirked.
I know it's getting more and more like Miami down here, he said, but a boy still ought to be able to go fishing without having to fight his way home. Don't you folks agree?
Absolutely, said my mother, although this time I detected a slight chill in her voice. When she glanced at me, I knew that she didn't believe a word Dusty Muleman was saying. I also understood that she expected me to suck up my pride and do what was best for the family, as my father had done. Tell Jasper Jr. it won't happen again, I said to Dusty.
That's the spirit. He gave me a gloating wink. The door swung open and Luno appeared. Up close, the man was even taller and uglier than I remembered. His slick, bald dome glowed pink in the pale light, and his smile was as crooked as his nose.
A swatch of dirty-looking gauze was taped on one of his branch-sized forearms, probably where my sister had chomped him. In one hand, he carried a walkie-talkie like Dusty's. In the other hand was a half-empty bottle of beer.
What's up, Chief? He said to Dusty. You seen a young girl hanging around the docks tonight?
Girl?
Little kid, Dusty said. Curly brown hair, if I remember right.
Ash blonde, corrected my mother. Luno's shark eyes flicked to the wound on his arm. I wondered if he'd ever admitted to Dusty that he'd been bitten by a pint-sized trespasser. I also wondered if Luno recognized me as the one who'd slugged him that night on the charter boat. If he did, he didn't let on. His gaze revealed nothing but icy and casual indifference, and I had no doubt he was capable of anything, even killing Lice Peaking. Dad didn't seem even slightly intimidated by the bald-headed goon, which is one of my father's problems. Sometimes he doesn't know when to be afraid.
No girl here tonight, Luno said with a shrug.
We want to look around for ourselves, Dad declared. Dusty said, Luno says she's not here, she's not here. You can take it to the bank. Please, said Mom, we won't be long.
Sit yourself, I got nothing to hide.
Dusty took the cigar out of his mouth. So, Payne, I meant to ask you, how are the anger management classes going? Part of the deal for Dusty dropping the charges was that my father would sign up for professional counseling. Dad thought it was ridiculous, of course. My mother said, we've got an appointment with a therapist in Key Largo as soon as Payne gets off house arrest.
Outstanding, said Dusty.
Yeah, I can hardly wait, Dad mumbled.
Listen, man, you can't go around sinking other people's boats just because you got some wacko idea in your head, Dusty told him. You need to get a grip, seriously.
He will, Mom said. My father's face reddened. Let's go look for Abby, I said. Luno went along, probably to make sure that we didn't go snooping anywhere Dusty didn't want us to go. We traipsed from one side of the basin to the other, up and down the charter docks. Dad and Mom kept shouting my sister's name, but the only response was some crazed dog barking its head off, a big old German shepherd that one of the captains kept chained on his boat. When we returned to the ticket shack, the light was off and Dusty had gone. Luno leaned against the fender of his beat-up station wagon and folded his beefy arms.
See? Girl no here, he said. You go away now.
Mom and I turned to leave, but Dad didn't move. He stood there, nose to nose with Dusty's goon. It was too dark to make out their expressions, but the tension in the air was like the hot static buzz you feel before the first clap of thunder. If anything's happened to my little girl, Dad warned in a low voice, I'll be back for you and your boss man. Luno grunted out a harsh chuckle and rasped something in a foreign language. Whatever he said, it didn't sound like he was the least bit worried by my father's threat. Mom spoke up. Payne, let's go. Being a sensible person, she was nervous in Luno's presence. Payne, please, she said again. It's late. Slowly, Dad pivoted his shoulders and began walking away. Feeling the heat of Luno's glare, the three of us trudged down the dirt road. Mom and I kept swatting at mosquitoes that were buzzing around my father, who hadn't bothered to use the bug spray. He didn't seem to notice the annoying little bloodsuckers, or maybe he didn't care. Once we were safely inside the car, my mother took a deep breath and said, All right, Noah, where should we look for your sister now? Unfortunately, I didn't have a plan B. I'd been so sure she'd gone to spy on the Coral Queen that I hadn't even considered any other possibilities. Let's just drive, Dad said glumly, fiddling with the switch on his spotlight. In the glow from the dashboard, his face appeared to be covered with odd black freckles. But then I realized that the freckles were actually more mosquitoes, too gorged with blood to fly away. Maybe Abby went home already, I said, hopefully. She's probably already back in bed, sleeping like a log. Mom nodded. Yes, that's where we should go next. She'll worry if she sees my car is gone. And what if she's not there? What then? Dad asked. Then we call the police, Payne, my mother said with a hitch of anger. There wasn't much to discuss after that. Mom drove slowly up the dirt road, away from the marina. Dad couldn't get the spotlight working, so he started cussing and pounding on it with the heel of his hand. Finally, he just gave up and flipped on the radio. My mother had to make a wide turn onto the old highway to avoid hitting a possum. She stepped on the gas and rolled down the windows to blow out the bugs. Dad was sunk down in the passenger seat, his head bowed. Mom was humming some old Beatles song, trying to act as if she wasn't all that worried, but I knew better. She was doing 52 in a 30-mile-per-hour zone, which for her was some kind of speed record. We had gone maybe a mile or two when I spotted a flash of something in the distance along the side of the road, something larger than the usual Keys critters. Mom, slow down, I said. What? My father looked up. Donna, stop, he exclaimed. Oh, for heaven's sake, Mom said, and hit the brakes. Together we broke out laughing, all three of us, in pure relief. There, in the headlights, stood my little sister. She was wearing her backpack, her white Nikes with the orange reflectors on the heels, and, hanging from the shoulder strap, our video camera. Her skinny bare legs glistened with insect repellent. As always, Abby was well prepared. She grinned and stuck out a thumb. How about a ride? She called out. 12. My parents were so thrilled to find Abby that they couldn't even pretend to be mad about her sneaking out of the bedroom window. They made us go to bed as soon as we got home, but she was up early the next morning, insisting on showing us the videotape that she'd made at the marina. I was impressed by what my sister had tried to do, but she's no Steven Spielberg. The tape was so dim and shaky that it was almost impossible to see what was going on. Abby was bummed. She scooted closer to the TV and pointed at the fuzzy image. There's the hose! See, they're dropping it right in the water! Dad asked, Honey, where were you hiding? Up a telephone pole? Tuna tower, my sister said over her shoulder. It was a cool idea, actually. A tuna tower is the tall aluminum platform that sits above the cockpit on a deep-sea charter boat. The captain climbs to the top so he can spot game fish crashing bait from far away. It would have been a perfect roost for secretly filming the casino boat, except for a couple of problems. First, Dad's video camera wasn't one of the newer models, so the picture was lousy when it was dark outside. Second, my sister never quite figured out how to zoom the lens, so everything on the tape was extremely small and grainy. You could make out the profile of the Coral Queen, but the crew looked like June bugs crawling around the deck. It's not your fault, Mom told Abby. It's the cameras. But I can still see what they're doing, can't you? My sister stabbed her finger at the TV. That's the hose from the holding tank, right there. Now I see it, I said. Me too, said my father. We really weren't sure what we were looking at, but we didn't want to hurt Abby's feelings. She popped the cassette out of the camera and announced, All we've got to do is take this to the Coast Guard, and Dusty Muehlman is toast! Mom and Dad exchanged doubtful glances. Neither wanted to be the one to tell Abby that her videotape was useless. I know what you're thinking, said my sister. But they've got super cool ways to enlarge the image and make it crystal clear. The FBI and CIA do it all the time. They can count the zits on a terrorist's nose from a mile off. A car door slammed in the driveway, startling us. We don't get much company at 7 in the morning. Mom looked out the window and said, "Payne, it's a deputy."
"Oh, not again," Abby groaned.
"Try to stall him," said my father. "Noah, come with me. I'll need your help." We hurried down the hall to my parents' room, Dad locking the door behind us. The electronic bracelet was hidden beneath the bed, along with the tools he had used to remove it. I held the heavy plastic collar around his right ankle while he worked feverishly with needle-nose pliers, a screwdriver, and a hex wrench.
"Hold extra still," he whispered. "One little slip and I could break the transmitter."
From the living room, we heard the low tone of the deputy's voice politely saying, "No thanks. Really, I'm fine." It sounded like Mom and Abby were trying to feed him breakfast. Moments later, I heard my mother's footsteps, followed by a light rap on the door. "Payne, are you up yet? There's a gentleman from the sheriff's department here to see you."
"Be up in a minute,"
Dad drawled, trying to sound sleepy. From the intense way he was gripping the tools, I knew my father truly didn't want to go back to jail. But that's where he was headed if we didn't get the bracelet clamped back on his ankle.
"Almost there," he murmured, pausing to wipe the palms of his hands. Both of us were sweating. We were so nervous.
There were more heavy footsteps in the hall, only this time they were too heavy to be my mother's. This time the knock on the door was sharp and impatient. "Mr. Underwood? Open up, please. This is Deputy Blair from the sheriff's office." "Mr. Underwood." Another hard knock. I motioned for Dad to hurry. He looked up, smiled, and made an okay sign with his fingers. When I let go of the bracelet, it held fast to my father's leg. The police would never know it had been unfastened for a night, or so we thought. Now the doorknob began to jiggle. On impulse, I grabbed up the tools and rolled under the bed. My father opened the door.
"Sorry to keep you waiting, officer, but I was putting on some clothes."
"Step this way, sir," I heard the deputy say in a tone that wasn't particularly friendly. My dad was an awesome fishing guide. Everybody in the Keys said so. Tarpon, bonefish, redfish, snook. Dad was dialed in on all of them. He could put his customers into fish while the other guides were getting skunked. My mother said it was a special talent he inherited from Grandpa Bobby. We all knew how much Dad missed being out on the boat every day. He never complained, but he was basically miserable driving a taxi up and down the highway. 3 different times he'd gotten rear-ended by other cars while crossing one of the bridges. That's because he always slowed down to stare out at the open water. He couldn't help himself, scoping out the tides, the depth, the wind direction, all the things that were important if you were hunting fish. After the 3rd accident, my father's boss at the cab company got on his case. Dad pointed out that, technically, none of the rear-enders had been his fault. It had always been the other drivers who'd gotten the tickets for following too close. But his boss didn't care. It was costing him money every time the cab was off the road in the body shop. "One more crash," he warned my dad, "and you're fired." The guy acting like he was Donald Trump. I had a hunch he wouldn't hold Dad's job open after what happened with the gambling boat, and I was right. When Mom called the taxi company, the owner told her that he'd hired a new driver the day my father got arrested. Mom told us she didn't blame the guy. He had a business to run. Still, I knew she was worried. The bills were piling up, and her paycheck wasn't nearly enough to cover them all. It would be a while longer before Dad could start searching for a new job, because now he was back in jail. I don't know if Dusty Muehlman ratted him out, or if the electronic ankle bracelet was programmed to send a certain signal when somebody messed with the lock. In any case, the sheriff ordered my father hauled in again for tampering with a court-ordered monitoring device. He wasn't in a great mood when I went to visit.
"This is really getting old," he said wearily.
"You didn't have to come today, Noah. This place is the pits." In a way, I was glad to find my father depressed, because that was a perfectly normal reaction to being in jail, and Dad acting normal wasn't something you could take for granted. He was a much different person from the happy camper I'd visited there only 3 weeks ago.
"I bet your mother's really ticked off," he said.
"What for?" I said. "How could any of us be mad at him? The only reason he'd pried off the stupid ankle monitor was so that he could leave the house to hunt for Abby. Any father would have done the same thing if one of their kids had disappeared in the middle of the night."
"Mom's trying to get a hold of Mr. Shine," I said.
"Tell her not to bother. They're only keeping me here for 48 hours, Dad said. "To, quote, teach me a lesson." Talk about a waste of tax dollars.
"What should we do with Abby's video?" I asked.
Dad shook his head.
"God bless her. She really tried."
"But you saw the tape, Noah. If we took it to the Coast Guard, they'd laugh." He was probably right. So what now, I asked, and mentally tried to brace for whatever new scheme my father had dreamed up. He cut a dark glance toward the broad, jowly deputy who was leaning against the door. The man was thumbing through a motorcycle magazine, but I assumed he was listening to every word we said. It's over, Noah, my father said with a sigh. I'm done with Dusty and the Coral Queen. I just want to come home and live a quiet, semi-normal life. Really? Really. I searched his face for some familiar hint of mischief, but it wasn't there. I know when I'm beat. I know when the ball game's over, Dad said. If he was putting on an act for our babysitter deputy, it was a good one. He looked totally tired and fed up, and his voice rang flat with defeat. Abby's little adventure was the last straw, he said. She risked her neck just to prove I was right about the casino boat. But you know what, Noah? Being right isn't worth squat if you're endangering the people you love. If anything bad happened to your sister last night, I'd never forgive myself. Never. I shuddered to think what that creepy Luno might have done if he'd caught Abby sneaking around with the video camera. Dad leaned forward and lowered his voice. Look, I wasn't trying to be some kind of hero when I pulled the plugs on Dusty's boat. I was only trying to stop him from using the ocean as a cesspool, and it backfired, okay? So now...
Time's up! The deputy slapped shut his magazine. My father squeezed my arm.
Things will be different when I get home. That's a promise, Noah. I left the jail with mixed-up feelings. I wanted things to be different at home, for Mom's sake, but I sure didn't want Dad to make himself into a whole different person. Yet, maybe there was no other way.
Later, Abby and I packed a lunch and rode our bikes to Thunder Beach. It was one of those bright, hazy days with no horizon, when the sea and the sky melt together in a pale blue infinity. The heat rippling off the dead calm water made the lighthouse seem to flutter and shimmy in the distance. We sat down on the warm sand and ate our sandwiches, and shared a bottle of water. I tried to gently tell Abby the truth about her videotape, but she was one step ahead of me, as usual.
It stunk, I know, she said. I already erased it.
You had a cool plan. It's not your fault it didn't work out.
Yeah, whatever.
When I told her what Dad had said at the jail, she got quiet for a while. Finally, she said,
So that's a good thing, right? Him promising to behave?
I guess, sure. A cherry red speedboat went tearing past the beach, then made a tight circle and roared back in our direction. The driver was a muscle-bound guy with so much gold hanging from his neck, it was a miracle he could sit up straight. He slowed to an idle and shouted something to a large blonde woman who was sunning herself alone, about 50 yards from Abby and me. The speedboat's engine was so loud that we couldn't hear what the man said, but the woman got up and sweetly motioned him to come closer to shore. When he did, she beamed him with a beer can.
"Whoa, baby!" Abby exclaimed. "She could play quarterback for the Dolphins!"
"I think I know who that is," I said. The speedboat took off at full throttle, driver heaving the beer can over the side. When he rooster-tailed past us, he was scowling and rubbing his forehead.
You know that lady?
Oh, don't tell me. Abby peered curiously at the blonde sunbather. We were too far away to be able to see the barbed wire tattoo or the hoops in her ears. Follow me, I told my sister. Shelley was shaking the sand off her towel when we walked up. She was wearing a neon yellow swimsuit and round mirrored sunglasses. Her face was smeared with so much zinc oxide that it looked like she'd fallen nose first into a frosted cake.
Well, if it isn't the amazing young Underwoods, she said.
What'd that guy in the red boat say to you? Abby asked with her usual bluntness.
He asked me for a date, sort of, said Shelley. But he needs to work on his manners.
You sure nailed him good, I remarked.
Trust me, he deserved it, she winked at Abby. Now, if he was Brad Pitt and not some loser gym monkey from Lauderdale, it's a whole different story. I'd be sitting beside him right now, speeding off to Bimini.
I told Shelley that Dad was back in jail.
That really bites, she said. You guys want something to drink?
Abby took a Coke, but I said no thanks. I noticed the beer can that Shelley had used to clobber the speedboat driver floating about 20 yards off the beach. She frowned.
Man, I hate litter bugs.
Me too, I said, and started wading out.
Hey, Stud, where do you think you're going?
To get the beer can. It's no big deal, I said.
It is too a big deal, said Shelley. Check out the water, Noah.
I glanced down and felt my stomach pitch. The shallows had a darkish yellow tint, Strands and clots of foul, muddy-looking matter floated here and there around my legs.
"What is it?" Abby asked.
"Something seriously gross," I said. Now I could smell it, too.
"Then get out," Abby shouted.
"That'd be my advice, too," said Shelley. "And pronto."
As disgusting as it was to be wading through the Coral Queen's toilet crud, I couldn't leave that beer can out there to float away. Whenever my father takes us out on the boat, he always stops to scoop up trash that other people have tossed overboard. Styrofoam cups, bottles, chum boxes, plastic bags, whatever. Dad says it's our duty to clean up after the brainless morons. He says the smart humans owe it to every other living creature not to let the dumb humans wreck the whole planet. So what we Underwoods do is pick up litter wherever we see it, even when it's drifting in sewage. When I came sloshing with the beer can out of the shallows, Abby stepped back and said, "Noah, that is so nasty."
"I guess it's true," Shelley said. "But the nutcase doesn't fall far from the tree."
"What does that mean?" I asked.
"It means you're just like your old man. Here, give me that thing."
With two fingers, Shelley plucked the can from my hand and held it at arm's length like it was radioactive.
"Notice the dent," she observed with a chuckle. "Jim Monkey must have had a hard noggin."
She dropped the can into a tall trash barrel. Then she turned back to me.
"I told you Dusty was dumping again, didn't I?"
It wasn't like I'd forgotten.
From where Abby and I had been sitting earlier on the beach, the water had looked normal and safe. Once you stepped in, though, it was a different story.
Shelley said, "Okay, nature boy, now you run straight home and scrub yourself down in a hot shower."
"Don't worry, I was already busy scraping out my legs with a sea grape leaf." Abby stood at the water's edge, gazing out in heavy silence. Shelley put an arm around her tense little shoulders and said, "Let's hit the road, kiddo, before your flaky brother gets any more bright ideas."
Abby turned to me. "The fish are gone. Those little green minnows we always see here."
"They'll be back," I said, "when the water clears up." Suddenly a loggerhead stuck up its knobby brown head. It might have been the same one that I'd seen that day with Tom and Rado, but I couldn't be sure. One turtle head looks a lot like another.
"No," my sister cried out. "Noah, do something!"
The loggerhead obviously didn't know it was swimming in filth. I began jumping and clapping my hands together, trying to spook it away from the beach, but that didn't work. The turtle floated lazily at the surface, blinking up at the sun. Abby began to shake and cry. Shelley told her not to worry. Turtles were tough customers. "They've been on this old planet a lot longer than we have. They're survivors," she said.
"Not this one," my sister sobbed. "Not if she gets sick from the bad water."
Abby was right. Absolutely right. So I charged back into the waves, kicking and splashing and hollering like a lunatic. It wasn't the brightest thing I've ever done, but it definitely got that loggerhead's attention. In a fright, it ducked under and scooted off, leaving only a boiling swirl. This time nobody said much when I came out of the dirty water. Abby looked like she wanted to give me a hug, but was understandably reluctant to get slimed. Shelley just shook her head in disbelief and tossed me a towel. Together we trudged down the beach to a paved lot where her jeep was parked.
"Promise me you'll go home and wash up," she said.
"Promise," I said.
"And Abby, promise me that you'll try to keep your brother from getting into more trouble?"
"You bet," Abby said half-heartedly. Shelley looked around to make sure the three of us were alone, which seemed obvious since her jeep was the only car in the lot.
"I'm going to tell you guys something, but you don't know where you heard it, okay?"
She leaned close, and the air turned to pure tangerine.
"There's a man who works at the Coast Guard station, a civilian named Billy Babcock. He's got a major gambling problem. You understand? He's addicted to it."
"You mean like drugs?" Abby said.
"Yeah, or booze," said Shelley.
"Billy can't stop betting, no matter how hard he tries. Blackjack, dice, roulette, you name it. He's a regular on the Coral Queen, like four nights a week. Sometimes more. You see where this is heading?"
I did.
"Does he owe Dusty money?"
Shelley nodded.
"Big time.
So much money that Billy couldn't pay it all back if he lives to be 100.
So he's repaying it another way."
"You got it, Noah," Shelley said.
"Every time the Coast Guard gets ready to pull a surprise inspection on the Coral Queen, Billy Babcock calls Dusty the day before to warn him. That's why they never catch him emptying the tank."
Abby flopped her arms in dismay.
"So Dad was right after all. Dusty is being tipped off."
"Hey, you didn't hear it from me," Shelley said.
"But,
shh." Shelley pointed toward a white pickup that was rolling into the lot. The truck pulled up and parked near the Jeep. Stamped on the door of the cab was Department of Parks and Recreation. A man in a tan uniform got out and gave us a friendly nod. From the bed of the pickup, he removed a small sledgehammer, a half dozen metal posts, and a stack of cardboard signs. "You folks on your way to the beach?" he asked. "What's up?" said Shelley. The man showed us one of the signs. Danger, it warned in big letters. Beware of contaminated water. Beneath those words in smaller red lettering, it said, "Swim at your own risk." "Contaminated with what?" asked my sister, acting as if she didn't know. "Human waste," said the man from Parks and Recreation. "We got a call from a guy who was fishing out here this morning. The health department came and sampled the water, tested off the charts. You all might want to try Long Key or maybe Harris Park." "Sounds like a plan," Shelley said, playing along. After the man went off to post the warning signs, my sister and I said goodbye to Shelley and began walking to our bikes. "Noah, what you did back there for that sea turtle, that was very dumb, I know." "No, cool," Abby said. "In a really twisted way." "Thanks, I guess." "We can't give up on this," she added grimly. "Now you sound like Dad."
"Well, you're the one who went into that scuzzy water twice. Doesn't it make you furious?"
"Yeah, it does. Furious and sick at the same time. But I thought of Abby's spying mission the night before and what a disaster it could have been. I'd never forget the cold-blooded look in Luno's eyes when he saw us standing in Dusty's ticket shack. "Mom doesn't need any more excitement from us," I told my sister.
"She won't have to know a darn thing," Abby said, "because next time we'll do it right."
The we was a given. I wasn't about to let my sister go anywhere near that marina again without me. We unlocked our bikes and started pedaling home in the thick July heat. I knew I stunk from the crappy water, but Abby claimed she didn't smell a thing. I kept thinking about how easy it was for Dusty Muehlman to get away with what he was doing. With so many big boats on the water, nobody had been able to trace the pollution along Thunder Beach directly to the Coral Queen. Or maybe nobody had tried hard enough. It was time that somebody did. "We can't get Dad involved in this either," I said to Abby. "He's had enough trouble already." "Definitely," she grinned.
"Noah, does this mean you've got a plan?"
"Don't get carried away," I said, which ought to be the Underwood family motto. 13. Dad was serious about getting serious. The same morning he was released from jail, he went out and got himself hired by a company called Tropical Rescue. It wasn't the sort of work that my father could put his heart into, but I knew why he took the job. It was the boat. They let him use a 24-foot outboard with a T-top and twin 150s, not for fishing, but for towing in tourists who ran out of gas or ran their boats aground. Normally, my father has no patience for these sorts of bumblers. He calls them googans, or even worse, depending on what kind of fix they've gotten themselves into. But Dad needed the job, so he buttoned his lip and kept his opinions to himself. Unless it's a life-or-death emergency, the Coast Guard refers disabled boat calls to private contractors like Tropical Rescue, which charge big bucks. They stay busy, too. It's amazing how many people are too lazy to read a fuel gauge, a compass, or a marine chart. They just point their boats at the horizon and go. All around the Keys, you can see their propeller trenches, long, ugly gouges like giant fingernail scrapes across the tidal banks. It takes years for the seagrass to grow back. Dad's first rescue job was a boatload of software salesmen from Orlando who were stranded all the way out at Nine Mile Bank. Somehow, they'd managed to beach a brand new Bayliner on a flat that was only 4 inches deep. That's not easy to do, unless you're bombed or wearing a blindfold. Miraculously, Dad restrained himself from saying anything insulting. He didn't get mad. He didn't make fun of the bonehead who'd been driving the boat. No, my father, the new and improved Payne Underwood, stayed calm and polite. He waited patiently for the tide to come up, tugged the Bayliner off the bank, and towed it back to Calusa Cove. He told us he almost felt sorry for the software salesman when he handed them the bill, which didn't even include the hefty fine from the Park Service for trashing the seagrass. It was probably one of the most expensive vacations those guys ever had. Even though Dad didn't like dealing with googans, he was 10 times happier on the water than he was driving a taxi. That meant Mom was in a better mood, too, laughing and kidding around the way she used to. The two of them were getting along so well that Abby and I were extra careful not to mention the sticky subject of Dusty Muehlman's casino boat.
We discussed our new plan of attack only when we were alone and away from the house, where our parents couldn't hear us. A couple of days after my father got out of jail, the Parks Department took down the pollution warnings at Thunder Beach. The next morning, Abby and I put on our bathing suits and grabbed a couple of towels and dashed outside. Mom and Dad figured we were heading for the park, which is exactly what we wanted them to think, because we were really going to Shelley's trailer. I had to knock a half dozen times. When she finally came to the door, she didn't seem especially delighted to see us. Her eyes were puffy and half closed, and it looked like somebody had set off a firecracker in her hair. "What time is it?" she asked hoarsely. 7:30, I said. She winced. "A.M.? You gotta be kidding me." Abby said, "It's important. Please." We followed Shelley inside. She sagged onto the sofa and tucked her legs up under her tatty pink bathrobe. "Killer headache," she explained, running her tongue across her front teeth. "Large party last night." She was clearly in pain, so we got straight to the point. "We need your help," I said. "Now."
"To do what?"
"To stop Dusty Muehlman. You promised, remember?" She laughed. One of those tired, what-was-I-thinking laughs. She looked across at Abby. "And you promised to keep your big brother out of trouble."
"We won't get in any trouble," Abby said evenly, "if you help us."
It sounded like Shelley was having second thoughts. I wondered if she really was afraid of Dusty Muehlman after all. In a discouraged voice, she said, "I don't know what we can do to stop him. He's tight with all the big shots in town."
"But he's poisoning Thunder Beach," I said. "You know how sick a kid could get from swimming in that bad water? Same goes for the fish and the dolphins and the baby turtles. It sucks what Dusty is doing. It's awful."
"Yeah, but..."
"And don't forget what happened to Lice," I added. "Remember how you told me you had a dog in this fight? Remember..."
"Lice is exactly what I've been thinking about," Shelley cut in.
"Say they really killed him, okay? You suppose they'd hesitate to do the same to me or you if something goes wrong?"
It was about time she got worried, and who could blame her? If she was right about Lice being dead, then Dusty and Luno were cold-blooded murderers. But one glance and I knew Abby wouldn't back off, no matter what the risks. Neither could I. "Shelley, I know it's dangerous. Not to mention crazy," she said.
"Yeah, and probably crazy," I agreed.
"Look, if you don't want to be a part of this, it's okay. I understand."
She shut her eyes and rolled back her head. "Uh-oh, here comes the guilt."
She pressed her knuckles to her ears.
"Oh, enough already, Noah. This poor blonde head's about to explode."
Shelley stretched out on the sofa. Abby got some ice cubes from the refrigerator and wrapped them in a dish towel, which Shelley gingerly positioned across her brow. After a minute or two of muffled moaning, she said, "Guess I wasn't feeling so brave when I got up this morning. But hey, a promise is a promise. Count me in."
Abby and I looked at each other with happy relief.
"So, what's the big plan?" Shelley asked. "And how does your daddy fit in?"
"He doesn't fit in. We're not telling him about it," Abby replied.
Shelley opened one bloodshot eye and studied us.
"That's probably a darn good idea," she said.
"But he'll still get blamed for everything if we get caught," I pointed out. "That's why we need you."
Shelley sighed. "So let's hear it."
When we told her our plan, she didn't laugh or make fun. She just lay there, thinking.
"Well?" Abby said impatiently.
Shelley levered herself upright, balancing the ice pack on her forehead.
"This idea of yours is so whacked," she said. "It just might work."
"Does that mean you'll help us?"
"And all I gotta do is flush?" she asked.
"That's it."
"That's all you gotta do," I said. "Flush and flush often." The next thing that happened was all my fault. I wasn't paying attention. Abby and I were riding home slowly along the old highway, talking about the Coral Queen, when somebody rushed up on us from behind. Before I could wheel around, Jasper Muehlman Jr. grabbed my bike and bull-grabbed Abby's, and together they dragged us backward into a stand of Australian pines.
"Not again," I thought in a panic. It wasn't me I was frightened for, it was my sister.
No sooner had Jasper Jr. knocked me to the ground than I heard Bull cut loose with a spine-chilling wail. Instantly, I knew what had happened. He'd been too careless with Abby.
"Make her let go," Jasper Jr. hollered at me.
"I can't."
Jasper Jr. jerked me to my feet. "Underwood, you don't make her let go of Bull, I'll snap you like a twig."
Bull kept on wailing. Abby had sunk her teeth into his left earlobe and was hanging on like a starved alligator.
Bull was at least a foot taller than her, so he had to be careful not to pull away, or else he might lose the entire ear. Whenever he moved, even a little bit, his wailing got louder. The boy was in serious pain. "Make her stop," Jasper Jr. demanded. "He's bleeding, man, can't you see?"